Probably goes without saying that one area of misunderstanding in the marriage roles is that of headship and subjection. So I thought we'd have a little talk tonight on headship and subjection, right? And that's where the lesson came from. There are husbands who do not understand their role as the head of the marriage or the head of their wives. And that leads to abuse and misuse of their authority. That's where you get the dominating husband and using threats and intimidation, you know, anger issues and all that stuff to try to get his way. Or you might have a husband who allows his wife to lead and assume control of the home and the relationship, and he's content to let her do this, not understanding that he's supposed to be the head of that relationship. Or you have men who are simply clueless as to what their role or direction or a functional relationship even is. So there are some problems when we don't understand this. And now you have wives who don't understand their role as what it means to be in subjection to their husband. And that leads to warped or distorted or maybe a sour view of marriage. They feel like a slave or a puppet. Or it leads to rebellion because of that feeling and defiance of the husband, of the scriptures, of God himself. Because, you know, God is the ultimate husband. And if you're mad at your husband, it's easy to be mad at God too for that very reason. Or there's bitterness and frustration because a husband won't lead and he won't fulfill his moral obligations as a husband and as a leader. Modern society both ridicules and despises the so-called traditional view of wives in subjection to their husbands. It's not a popular subject out there. Many think, or are taught to think, that an advanced, progressive society must give both men and women equal authority in all realms. And so this concept of a traditional marriage doesn't sit very well with our modern feminism and our modern, you know, equal roles viewpoint here. It seems to be primitive and non-workable and backward. And that kind of thinking implies that God's system, which is marriage, is oppressive and unfair and even misogynistic, which is a big fancy word that means basically down on women. Okay, and that's really not our lesson tonight, to explore all the fallacies and misconceptions of modern society, except to say what's often happening there is that most people confuse marriage roles with human worth. And they think that because I'm not an equal in the marriage as far as authority or guidance is concerned, therefore I'm not equal in human worth. And that's just not true. And I hope to dispel that myth, if indeed it exists, tonight in this lesson. But we do want to take a snapshot. This is a big subject, and we're just going to take a snapshot of this evening and look at what this means. Subjection and submission are nearly the same. They're related words, but not necessarily interchangeable. Subjection in the New Testament comes from a military term, which means literally to rank under, as in the military. A private ranks under a sergeant, and a sergeant ranks under a general. And the private is no less of a man just because he's a private, and a general is no greater of a man because he's a general. We're not talking about worthiness here of persons. We're talking about rank. We're talking about position. We're talking about that which is needed in order for law and order to exist. In the military, there has to be a chain of command, and everyone has to know their place in order for the thing to function. Otherwise, if everyone was equal, imagine how that would be in war. Or imagine how that would be as far as the structure of a military. If the private entered into the military and he has the exact same say and equal authority as the general, and you're looking at that and going, that wouldn't work at all. Well, then why would it work in marriage? If we're talking about the need for the same thing. It has nothing to do, then, with the character or the value of the person. It has a specific reference to one's standing or rank or position relative to another's. It's like what we talked about in class this morning. We're talking about the weak and the strong. The weak are called the weak because relative to the strong, they're weaker. And the strong are strong because relative to the weak, they're stronger. It's not a matter of who's a better person. And it's not a matter of one's inferior and the other is superior. It's a matter of, as far as their spiritual maturity is concerned, one is above the other. And that can change, right? I mean, the other one can come up and be a strong person, and then another weak person will be there, and so on. So it's not a matter of evaluation. It's a matter of comparison. one thing compared to another. Submission is the act or the condition of being in that subjective position. Literally, the word means in the Greek to put oneself under, as if the control or the authority of another person, or to make oneself liable to another person. In other words, to be held accountable to them. Okay? So, if you are in submission to the elders here of this congregation, if you are a member here, you're not a lesser person than they are, and they're not a greater person than you are, but you have voluntarily decided to put yourself under their governing leadership, their oversight, for the purpose of, again, functionality, so that this congregation can function. And at the same time, you're making yourself liable to them. You are giving account to them. Doesn't the Bible say that? Give account to those who, or submit yourself rather to those who give account for the congregation. They have to answer to God, but you have to answer to them, in essence. So both terms are voluntary in the sense that a person chooses to put himself in that context. But the context for submission demands expectation to conform in this matter. Let me explain. In the military, you don't have to join the military, okay? In the sense of a military example here. You don't have to join the military. But if you do, then you've got to be in subjection to your superiors. You can't walk into the military and say, I know that most people are in subjection, but I'm not going to be. That's just not going to last very long. Same with civil authority. You don't have to either be or remain a citizen of this country. But if you are one, or if you choose to remain one, then you've got to be submissive to the laws and the authorities of this country. Same with marriage. You don't have to get married. And therefore, you don't have to. Wives, you wouldn't have to be in subjection to your husbands. But inasmuch as you chose to get married, you accepted the responsibility or the expectations of what marriage is. And that means that you need to be in subjection to, really, not just to your husband, but even more so to the author, God Himself, of marriage. So the context determines then the expectations here. And once you enter into that context, then the expectation is there. So let's back up just a moment and look at this in kind of a bigger picture view. A woman, whether she is married or not, is to be in subjection to men generally as per the context of the order of creation. That's not something I decided, and that's not something I have any business, you know, regulating. This is exactly what God has done, though. He has placed men and women in this particular context as He saw fit to place them. And that's extremely important to see that from that perspective. And the reasons for that are really very basic, and but yet evident, self-evident, I think, in Scripture. For one, a woman was created after man. And that has to do with the sequentialness of it all, okay? He was the first, and she came after that. And a woman was created from man, and that speaks to her origin. And then she was created for man, and that speaks to her purpose. So with regard to sequence, origin, and purpose, God says this woman is to be, in essence, submissive to this man. Generally speaking, women in subjection to men. And that just sounds so grating, doesn't it, to our ears in our modern society. In creation, the woman ranks under a man. As far as a living soul, however, she is equal to him. A man's soul is not worth more than a woman's. And a woman's soul is not worth less than a man's. Think about that. It's just with regard to the earthly context in which God has placed us, which is what we're talking about when we talk about the natural order of things, the creative order of things, if you will. It's not a negative thing. It's a factual thing, a historical thing, and yes, even a necessary thing. Even Jesus Himself subjected Himself to His Father, even though He was head over all men, and over all women, and over His church. So Jesus is not asking women to do anything different than what He has already done, in essence.
When we think about headship, headship is extremely important to God, and therefore it needs to be extremely important to us. In every case where God has had people do something in His name for His purpose, He has provided headship or leadership in order to accomplish the task. Whether it was Moses and Joshua leading the Israelites out of the Sinai wilderness into the Promised Land, or whether it's the apostles themselves leading the church out of, you know, Judaism and whatever else was going on there into, the church age, God appointed leaders, and these leaders are masculine leaders. They are men. And that doesn't mean that women didn't play a part or weren't helpful and didn't support. It just means that this is how God has worked throughout Scripture from beginning to end. And the Godhead itself has a Father, and all creation has a Creator, and the church has a divine leader, and every society requires proper leadership, and every congregation requires proper leadership. And from God's point of view, this is all masculine leadership. And I know what it might sound like to a woman. It's like, well, then where am I at in here? It's not like you're out left out. We're talking about headship here. We're not talking about the worth of each person involved. We're simply talking, in essence, about the chain of command or the level of authority or basically law and order, once again. And if these things are true in all those other areas here, then there's nothing unusual to expect this in marriage. Likewise, if women are subjective to men generally, then it stands to reason that they're subjective or submissive to their husbands specifically. So this is a constant and consistent facet of everything that God has shown us in Scripture. I know it's not popular today, but honestly, as Christians, we're not interested in what's popular today. We're interested in what God has to say on the matter. Okay? I hope, right? That's what we should be interested in. Now, I want to clarify something here, that a man's wife is subject to all men generally, but not in the same way that she is in subjection to her husband. And the reason I bring this up is because subjection in marriage is a direct response to a God-given relationship, or a headship in marriage, I should say. Subjection directly involved with headship, okay? You can't have subjection without headship, as I'll say later. You can't have headship without subjection. In the marriage, there is both roles here. This is unique and exclusive to the man and the woman who are married together. As Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22 says, wives, be subject to all husbands in the same way. No, he doesn't say that. And he doesn't say, wives, you are in subjection to all men in the same way as you are to your husband. He doesn't say that. He says, wives, be in subjection to your own husbands. So that means that my wife, generally speaking, is in subjection to all men, but as a wife, she is in subjection only to me in that role. And I am the head of only her in that role, okay? Not the head of all marriages or all wives, but just the one that I married. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 7, it says there that the woman is the glory of man. Now, that's generally speaking, and Paul is still dealing with the order of creation thing there. He's not talking about husbands and wives there. He's talking about the woman is the glory of man. And therefore, she has to act accordingly. She can't be the glory of man if she's bitter and vile and, you know, constantly challenging his authority and debasing him and so on. But if that's true in the general sense of creation, then in marriage, the wife is also the glory of her husband. But what that means is that she needs to act accordingly. She cannot become her husband. She cannot replace her husband. And she cannot assume the authority of her husband, because by doing any of those things, she is no longer the glory of her husband, but now she is a rival to, a competitor with, and a usurper of her husband. And that's different. So we're trying to look at this just in a very basic understanding of what it means here to have headship and subjection in marriage. In Proverbs chapter 12, verse 4, it says that an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. The crown is not meant to rule over the king, yet the king has no honor and respect without a crown. And so the king, and in this case, the husband and his crown, his wife, have a mutually beneficial relationship. They both help each other. They both honor, in essence, each other. And she is the glory of him, but he is the one who loves and nurtures and cherishes her. And they both need each other to work together in that context. On that note, you often hear something like, well, man is not complete without a woman. And usually you hear that in some way to almost justify, you know, the worthiness of a woman. I don't think that needs to be justified. I think women are worthy on their own merit in the sense of, you know, if they're acting like godly women, then there's merit to that in itself. But this goes both ways. Man is not complete without a woman, but a woman is not complete without a man. And I'm talking about, of course, in a marriage context here. Both the husband and the wife complement and complete the other. But just because they complement and complete each other doesn't mean that they're equal in roles and authority. And that's really where headship and subjection comes in here, or roles in authority and responsibility. They're not equal in all that. The marriage as a family needs headship in order to function properly. And God has given that responsibility not to the wives, but to the husbands. In other words, the roles and the responsibilities of marriage are defined by God, not by men, not by husbands, not by the church, not by society. And I've had women over the years tell me, in essence, I don't like the fact that I have to be in subjection to my husband, you know, as if I made the rules. And my response to that is I just simply point back to the scriptures and say, this is what God established. This is what he said. This is how he wants it. And therefore, if you want to honor God, this is how it must be done. Someone says, I don't like that. You don't have to like it. It's not about liking it. It's about honoring God, being obedient to him. And I hope that you like honoring God and being obedient to him. In Colossians 3:18, wives, be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Fitting means proper or acceptable, or in this case, even functional and pleasing to God. The wife who subjects herself to her husband not only honors her husband, is the glory and crown of her husband, but also honors God, the creator of marriage. And that's really where we want to go with that, in looking at subjection in a positive way. And headship, for that matter, in a positive way. Because in Ephesians 5, 22 through 24, let's turn there and just look at that. I know it's part of the reading, but just to cement the idea here once again, you'll see that both parties, the husband and the wife, have their respective roles and need to function the way that they're supposed to. Wives, be subject to your husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be to their husbands in everything. So both the husband and the wife have their places or their roles in marriage. Both are expected to honor and fulfill those roles. The failure to do so ends up being what we've looked at in previous lessons, a dysfunctional marriage and, yes, disobedience to God. A marriage, or a home life, if you will, cannot function without leadership. There has to be, and I don't like this term because I can't find a better one than law and order, but there has to be law and order, okay? Reminds me of a TV show. But still, I mean, there does have to be law and order. And that's just the way it has to be in every context in which you have human beings, multiple human beings together. In order to obtain some objective, there has to be law and order. There has to be headship and followership. There has to be someone leading, and there has to be others who are following. It just doesn't work any other way. So there has to be this structure, or this stability, and this chain of command, and yes, this respect. Otherwise, it's like driving blindfolded. Okay? Yeah, you might last for a little while if the road's straight. But you're not going to last for long. It's just inevitable. You're going to go off and drive in the ditch or hit something. And that's what marriages do. They drive in the ditch or they hit something because they're driving blindfolded. They just don't have the proper guidance if indeed they're not following the plan, the proper pattern that God has set. So a husband who manages his household well is one who listens to the word, does his best to carry out those responsibilities entrusted to him by God. He is a good steward. The wife, likewise, who subjects herself to her husband and supports his leadership, is one who listens to the word and does her best to carry out those responsibilities entrusted to her. She also is a good steward. Both the husband and the wife are good stewards in the things that God has given them to do. As I said earlier, headship cannot exist without subjection. Imagine a military campaign where the patrol unit or the troops are all together and they have their generals and their colonels and all those things, the different strata of military's life there. They're all together there and they're talking about what needs to be done. The general says, okay, this battalion or this unit's going to go over there. And then the unit says, nah, we don't want to do that. We're thinking we're going to go over here. We're just thinking it's a better thing. And the general says, no, I'm the authority figure here. And they say, yeah, we know. But we really want to go over here instead because we just feel that would be a better deal. Then he turns to the other unit and says, well, you guys need to go over here. And we've been thinking about that. Us guys been talking. And we're thinking that if we went over here, did this kind of thing over here. Do you see what's happening very quickly? Nobody's going anywhere. And they're just sure to fail. Headship needs subjection in order to work. A husband whose wife will not live in subjection to him undermines his leadership, prevents him from doing what God had intended for him to do. We are not saying, and I want to be very clear on this, we're not saying that he is exempt if his wife will not cooperate. Because this is sometimes what I hear in response. Well, my wife won't cooperate, so I'm off the hook, right? No, it just means that marriage fails to be what God designed it to be. It dishonors the husband, but it also dishonors God. Likewise, subjection or submission here, a person in submission, cannot feel its objective without headship. We're not saying that a wife is off the hook or exempt from this if her husband won't lead. We're simply saying that marriage is not going to be what it was supposed to be. It's not going to function the way that God intended it to function if he will not lead. Men often wonder why women have such a difficult time with subjection, and yet many men are clueless how to lead. And it's not because they cannot know, but often because they're too uninterested, too preoccupied, or too proud to learn how. And it just doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't have to be that way. Headship does not mean barking orders. It does not mean treating your wife like your personal slave. And it does not mean, wife, I'm going to make the decision here and you just be quiet and I'll take care of this. I have seen all of those scenarios in Christian marriages over the years. That's not what headship is. Likewise, subjection does not mean waiting hand and foot on your husband, cowering in fear at his anger and intimidation, or being treated like one of the children. I have also seen every one of those in Christian marriages over the years. That is not subjection, not how the Bible portrays it. So there's some misunderstanding here, okay? There's some need for us to look into this subject. Headship in marriage is modeled after Christ's headship of his church. It is not a position of domination or intimidation or abuse, but it leads the marriage heavenward and involves whatever is required to lead that marriage heavenward. The one thing that every Christian husband ought to strive for as the head of his wife is to provide for her spiritual welfare over and above everything else. Because that's what he should do as a spiritual guide to her. I'm not saying that he's always going to be right and infallible. What I'm saying is that should be his objective. Wife, how can I lead you where I'm going? Heavenward. Not just like, hey, I'll see you do your own thing, right? But rather, come with me. I want to go to heaven and I want you with me. That should be the objective of the husband, regarding her as a fellow heir of the kingdom of God, as Peter says, 1 Peter 3, verse 7. And whatever thing or attitude or behavior stands in the way of that is expendable and unacceptable. In other words, it can be gotten rid of in order to preserve that objective. Subjection in marriage is modeled after the church's submission to Christ. It is not a position of inferiority or humiliation or embarrassment, but seeks to serve God by serving the husband's best interest. One thing that every Christian wife ought to strive for is to be subject to her husband as to the Lord. The as to the Lord part being the emphatic there. In other words, instead of resisting this scenario because her husband's not perfect, like she just discovered this, I don't know, I could have told her that before she got married, okay? But her husband's not perfect and she might resist that. Instead of looking and focusing on the imperfection of men, look beyond that and realize that what I'm trying to do here is not just be in subjection to my husband, I'm trying to please the Lord. Look beyond the imperfection and look toward the perfect objective. And whatever thing or attitude or behavior stands in the way of that is expendable and unacceptable, which means that it can be gotten rid of in order to meet that objective. Now, without going into minute details here, that's really what we need to know about this subject. A lot more could be said. We don't have time to do that tonight, but society treats subjection as a bad thing, as a negative thing, as an oppressive thing. And yet, no society can function or will last if it doesn't have leaders and followers. And so while society likes to pretend that women and men in marriage, they have equal roles and equal authority and equal responsibilities, no, they don't. Because that doesn't even work. And so you got society talking out of both sides of his mouth. On one hand, it's like, well, we need to give these women, you know, their rightful place and so on. And the women are going, yeah, yeah. But the fact is, that kind of relationship never works. And I think society knows that. Let's just have to say the right thing, you know, to make everyone happy. Here's what God says in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 40. All things must be done properly and in an orderly manner. That's how God always operates. That's how his kingdom always operates. And that's how he expects marriages to operate. With decency, properly, if you will, or with propriety and in order. Husbands who fail to lead are just as detrimental to their marriage as wives who fail to follow. The relationship will not be a Christ-centered one if one or the other tries to make it work without the other. Both need to follow the pattern. I realize that some of you are married to a non-Christian, and I realize that that's a struggle for some. We're talking idealistically. I understand that. And we're talking about the assumption that both the husband and wife are Christians, and that's not always the case. But the principles that we are talking about can still be applied. Remember, what we've been talking about is your personal responsibility, not that of your spouse, necessarily. It would be wonderful and ideal if both spouses were Christians and both gave themselves over to this entirely, but that's not always the case. In essence, headship and subjection begin with a proper attitude and respect for God. Because if you don't have that, then you really don't have much of anything else. Every husband and wife ought to ask himself or herself, am I serving in the role in marriage as God has instructed me? Or am I simply doing what seems to suffice? Am I simply doing what I'm used to doing? Or am I doing what seems to work or what I'm comfortable with? Because those things aren't good enough. You might be comfortable with a lot of things, and all of them might be ungodly. People get comfortable with wickedness all the time. That doesn't make it right, though. No one who disobeys God and his word is going to have a successful marriage as God would determine it, no matter what they claim. Yet those who truly honor God and his word are going to manifest that honor in their marriage roles, not outside of them, okay? In other words, not apart from there. They're going to reveal their obedience to God in those roles. All right. As I said, a lot more could be said. Our objective tonight is just to give an overview, a snapshot, as I said. The lesson is now yours. I hope this is helpful to kind of put things in perspective. At the same time,